Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that's going to determine just what the future will bring. And I have to remind you the views that are expressed here are not those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of this station. They're my views, the views of our guests, the views of our callers. And, of course, we welcome your calls right here at the Radio Liberty at 1-888-24-LIBERTY or out across America at 464-8295. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. But please hold your calls for the time being because we have with us on the line a very, very special guest, Craig Roberts. Hi, Craig. How are you doing?
Hello, Dr. Stan. Always glad to be back.
Well, it's always good to have you with us. And Craig certainly was in the military, a retired lieutenant colonel in the Army Reserve. He's written some great books, which we carry, Medusa File, Kill Zone, is it The Missing Witnesses?
No, The Dead Witnesses.
The Dead Witnesses, all right. They're not missing anymore. Big pardon?
They're not missing anymore.
All right, fine. Well, anyway, of course, we thought maybe we might talk a little bit about your take on what's happening as far as the investigation of the terrorist attack, and then we'll get into the end of the book about The Doorway to Hell, which I know you co-authored along with General Wheeler. What do you think about what's going on today? All this fol-de-rol, and of course they keep saying, well, did the president know or did he not know? And then now they're saying that, of course, he didn't get any of the information from the FBI agent in Phoenix. And do you really think that they're really trying to get to the bottom of anything? Or you think they're just trying to confuse the issue and, you know, if they can prove that the president didn't know, then we've got nothing to worry about?
Well, I think it's all partisan smoke and mirrors. The president gets daily briefings on intelligent stuff every day, and you know that we got a huge government. We've got all kinds of institutions that are involved in the mix here, and the chain of command is very diversified. And he has the National Security Council that gives him a daily briefing in the morning on things. But you know, every day he gets briefed of the possibility of terrorist attack. You know, it's like the boy that calls wolf. You know, eventually you get tired of listening to him, you don't pay any attention. Now, he may have known that Al-Qaeda was active, and he may have known that Al-Qaeda said that we were going to go after American targets. You know, it could be targets abroad, it could be targets. We've been getting those same threats for 10 years. As far as having any foreknowledge on them getting in you know, American airliners and hijacking those and running them into buildings and so on, I'm sure that he didn't have any idea that that was going to happen. We had fairly decent airport security before. It wasn't real tight, but it was decent. But who would expect anybody to get on an airplane and be able to pull off what happened? Now, the key is they'll never, ever be able to do that again, not because of any changes in the laws. The laws, that's a totally different topic that we need to talk about. But the reason is passengers will no longer allow that to be happen because they know what happens if somebody jumps up with a knife and grabs a flight attendant for a hostage or whatever. You know, what these people were told, according to the information that we've got, was that, you know, we've taken over command of the airplane, we're going to land pretty soon and let you off, everybody just be quiet, you're going to be safe. You know, and so they all sat there. Evidently that didn't occur on the one that went down near Pittsburgh. But the ones that went to the World Trade Center, the ones, you know, no one seems to have interfered on those airplanes with the hijackers. Now, that's not going to happen again in the future. You know, you're going to have anybody that jumps up is all of a sudden going to have, you know, 8 or 10 guys on him. I've flown several times since then. I flew right after, just a couple of weeks after the World Trade Center deal, from Oklahoma to Dallas to Houston to LA International to Honolulu and back again. And what they've done now is they've gone the other way with security and made it so rough that you don't even hardly want to fly anymore. I'm always the guy that they pick out to search their baggage and do all this sort of thing for some reason, and I don't know why. I mean, blonde hair, blue eyes, and, you know, 55 years old. I don't know why they would do that. But bottom line is getting back to the president, I don't think that he had any particular foreknowledge of anything If anything happened, if anybody had any foreknowledge, it was the Clinton administration. The Clinton administration had tons of foreknowledge of these types of events that not only were going to happen, but did happen, because now we know, and we're going to prove in court for the first time in the civil suit, that there was an Al-Qaeda Middle Eastern connection to the Oklahoma City bombing in 1995.
Well, tell us about that suit that's going to come down, because that was been consistently covered up by the Clinton administration and the mass media.
Well, interestingly enough, I've kind of been called back into this because I was one of the few investigators at the time that knew of the Middle Eastern connection and continued to follow up on it when the FBI and all the other people, you know, they ran out the door and went the other way, and their thing was McVeigh and Nichols, and we're out of here. And that wasn't it at all. The McVeigh and Nichols were only small players in the deal. We knew from day one on that we had a Middle Eastern connection to the bombing. We had, you know, the two guys in blue jogging suits that held the parking place in front of the front door for the Ryder truck. We had the John Doe II, who was a Middle Easterner, who was riding with McVeigh in the truck. We had another Middle Eastern type, Iraqi, who was standing on the street talking to McVeigh outside the truck in front of the post office while they waited for the parking place to open up in front of the Murrah building, because there was a UPS truck that had parked there, beat him to the spot. You know, we know about all these other connections. We know about Abraham Ahmad. We know, you know, the whole enchilada. Well, all of that, you know, we couldn't get anything done. We went to a separate grand jury. Charles Key worked real hard to get another grand jury going here in the state of Oklahoma, a state grand jury. There was a federal grand jury, and the state grand jury was manipulated by Bob Macy, who was the Oklahoma County prosecutor, district attorney at the time. And he just basically had that grand jury rubber stamp the federal grand jury that McVeigh and Nichols were involved to the exclusion of others. And the only indictment that came out of there was an indictment on David Hoffman, who was a witness to the grand jury, who had sent the grand jurors copies of his book on the Oklahoma City bombing to give them more information. And because he got more information to the grand jurors, he was indicted. So,
whatever happened to him, did he?
Well, they ended up dropping the whole thing very quietly when there was some court manipulations that went on, some lawsuits were threatened, and so on. And they gave him like 2 weeks of community service picking up trash on the highway or something like that. I forget exactly what it was. It wasn't much. He now lives in California, is off doing other things.
All right, fine. Well, we're going to have to take a quick break here. But when we get back, I'd certainly like to explore this, because this is so important. If there was a Middle Eastern connection to the bombing of the Murrah building and it was intentionally covered up, why we have to ask why. And, of course, that goes right to the heart of the Clinton administration. Well, right now, of course, we want to remind our listeners that you can help Radio Liberty in our efforts by changing your long-distance carrier. And if you are not already with a Christian long-distance carrier, we hope you'll decide you want to go to Promise Vision. Their prices are very, very competitive. It doesn't cost anything to change over. And when you have a problem, if you ever do, you call, you get a real live human being. If you have AT&T or MCI, call them. Just call them and try to get a human being. And then call Promise Vision at 866-448-5631. That's 866-448-5631. Tell them you'd like to change over to Promise Vision. And when you do that, of course, 15% of whatever your long-distance bill is will revert to Radio Liberty and help us do what we do. Again, the number to call is 866-448-5631. And then, of course, we also carry the Phonopoly sets. And Phonopoly is a game that is designed to teach children who have been victims of the public educational system how to read phonetically, how to spell phonetically, and how to pronounce words phonetically, to get them to sound out the words. We have a phonetic language, and the current method of look-see teaching has resulted in, according to HHS, 96 million partially or totally illiterate Americans. You couldn't do that bad a job unintentionally. Phonopoly is played like Monopoly. The children have to learn to sound out the words. And by the time they get through the third game, why, they're going to be reading very, very well. It's 5 games, 5 board games, 2 bonus games, and, of course, there's 2 additional books we throw in. Call 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-5-HIV-WAR. Have you ever wondered what really happened at Waco? Have you ever wondered if maybe the government was not giving you the full story? Well, there is the most amazing video. It's called Waco, the Rules of Engagement, 2.5 ripping hours of the story of a government onslaught into a group of peaceable people. Now, their religion may be different than yours and mine, but they were still Christians, they still believed in the Bible, and they believed that the government would one day become their enemy and destroy them. Well, Waco, the Rules of Engagement is a video that everybody who loves freedom should see, because the ultimate conclusion is the government did not want them to come out. The government did everything they could to keep them from coming out, to antagonize them, loud music, lights all the time, to totally create a situation where they could not think clearly or would respond normally. Waco, the Rules of Engagement, is currently unavailable through regular sources. Call 1-800-5-HIB-WAR right now. Well, Dr. Stan, back here at Radio Liberty, our guest is Craig Roberts, who was a policeman who was actually working on the Oklahoma City bombing right immediately after the episode. So basically, of course, you knew, and it was very obvious to other people who worked on this, that there was a John Doe 2 and a John Doe 3 and a John Doe 4. And, of course, the government did everything they could to keep that from coming out at the trial, to the point where the judge actually refused to allow the information to be brought forward by Stephen Jones, who was Timothy McVeigh's attorney, because the last thing that somebody wanted was for the American people to learn that although Timothy McVeigh and Terry Nichols were involved, others were involved as well. And it had a Near East connection, and it tied over either to Iraq or Iran or maybe both of them. And had we brought that out at that time, maybe we wouldn't have had September 11th. You pick up the story, Craig.
Well, we knew that these things were going on at the time. We were absolutely amazed that you couldn't enter evidence in a trial because a judge would refuse to accept the evidence when the evidence directly was influential on your case. In other words, if you could enter evidence for your own defense, there's no reason not to enter the evidence as long as it's entered legally. And here, they were picking and choosing and filtering what evidence could be entered, not only at the trial of McVeigh and Nichols in Denver, but also at the grand juries. All of that was filtered. The whole thing was manipulated at the very highest levels, and I think it all goes back to what was in the Murrah building and what happened on day one when they pulled all those records out and hauled them off and stopped rescuing people who were trapped in the building for about 4 or 5 hours while they unloaded records out of the basement of the building. I think that's the key to the whole investigation, and we may be able to get into some of that when we go to trial here shortly. What has happened is that more information has come forth, and since 9-1-1, they have also stumbled across some things on it from Al-Qaeda and from the Middle Eastern connections that have come out of the Philippines. Now, we have to remember that while we were, while the American media was out chasing ghosts and rabbits on this militia trail and the right wing and so on and so forth, the real perpetrators were making their getaway. And all of the trails were going cold. But one of the trails that was uncovered, and it couldn't be covered back up, and it's always been there, was the trail that led to the Philippines through Nichols. Now, we have to remember that Nichols made several trips to the Philippines. We're not even sure how many he made. He's made several phone calls to the Philippines. They know what numbers he called. They captured this stuff within a couple of days of the bombing, all these phone records. Some of them were made on that credit card that they had bought through the Spotlight. He had traveled to Cebu City, and he had traveled to Manila. What he did over there was the mystery, and that was not followed up on at the time by our government. Since then, it has been followed up on because the Philippine government has turned over evidence quite by accident. What they were doing is they were working on a case where they were after Islamic terrorists in the Philippines that were part of these different various terrorist fronts over there. And they had a deep cover agent inside one of these fronts. What had happened recently was this deep cover agent, his name was Edward Angeles, told his wife about some things that had happened in a warehouse outside of Manila at a meeting he had had, actually several meetings he had, but a couple in particular, with a guy named Nichols, who they called the farmer, He was an American. He was accompanied to these meetings by another American they called the Tall American. Now, we're not sure right now if that was McVeigh or if it was somebody else, maybe Nichols' handler or somebody traveling with Nichols. Obviously, it was not a Filipino or a Middle Easterner. Now, at this meeting, they met with Ramzi Yousef. They met with, this is in 1993, they met with Abu Sayyaf. Okay, now Abu Sayyaf is a direct link to Al-Qaeda in Pakistan and Afghanistan.
Now, for our listeners, first of all, Abu Sayyaf are the group that are holding the Burnhams over there. This is a terrorist organization. And Ramzi Yousef was the man who was responsible for the first attack on the World Trade Center, and he was allowed to get away, and he was over there in the Philippines planning on blowing up American planes. And, of course, they had a plan to hijack our planes and fly them into our buildings. And this is 1995 when he was finally caught. But this must have been, 1993 when these meetings were held?
1993, and one of the plans, one plan was to blow up, I've heard 10 and I've heard 12 American jumbo jets. And Ramzi Yousef actually built devices that were smuggled aboard these airplanes by Muslim women with these long robes on, and they carried it under the robes, and they would put them under the seat cushions. But each time they were detected, for some reason or other, I don't know the details on that. But only one bomb went off, and I think that was on an Air India jet. But this was about 1993, and one of Yosef's things that he was working on was to steal an American wide-body jet and fly it into CIA headquarters at Langley, Virginia. So to crash an airplane, hijack an airplane in the United States and crash it into a large American building was on the burner from 1993 on with these people. And they were directly connected to Al-Qaeda, to Abu Sayyaf. They were receiving funding through Abu Sayyaf, and also one of the reasons that Nichols was going to these meetings is they were teaching him how to build bombs to bring down buildings. Now, that was one of the things that was several of the things that Edward Angeles told his wife. Well, his wife, just a few months ago, I don't know if it was cancer or what it was, but she was dying, and she made a deathbed statement about all this to a Manila Times reporter. Now, this Manila Times reporter wrote everything down and checked the article, several ways, and other people checked it as well, and all of them came up that she was basically telling the truth on everything that she knew about. Edward Angeles had been arrested. He was held in jail over there for a while, and they were going to release him, and he said, "Don't release me, because if you release me, I'll be killed." And the reason he would be killed is he was the deep cover agent for the Philippine intelligence services over there, the state intelligence services. He was a deep cover agent. He was a leader in this Islamic terrorist group. That's how come they were able to keep up on it so well. Well, when he was released from jail, they had figured out that he was an informant, and he didn't even get to the street outside the jail before two guys walked up behind him and emptied 245 automatics into his back. So she was the only one left that knew the story, and when she found out she was dying, she spilled the story to the Manila Times, which eventually got over to Judicial Watch over here and to an attorney in Oklahoma City named Mike Johnston. Now Johnston has joined Judicial Watch, and they filed a lawsuit on the behalf of the Oklahoma City survivors against Iraq. Now, the reason they filed it against Iraq is because all of the Middle Eastern terrorists that were involved in the Oklahoma City bombing that they know of, that they can take to court, were from Iraq. It was funded from Al-Qaeda. It was part of a plan from Al-Qaeda, but the actual people in the street who did it were former Iraqi soldiers that were brought over here as POWs after the Gulf War, and were scattered all over the country and immediately formed terrorist cells. Two cells were set up in Oklahoma City. One cell was involved in the Oklahoma City bombing. They were working for a Palestinian guy who owns a lot of real estate in Oklahoma City. And he is a PLO individual. He would buy houses, burn them down, claim the insurance, take the money to the PLO. He held an Israeli passport, interestingly enough. But it was because his family, his people, were in Beirut and they were in Jerusalem. So we put all this together. Of course, we tried to get the FBI to look at it. They didn't even want to hear about it. Jana Davis of Channel 4 in Oklahoma City did a great deal of work in this. She put a big package together. She tried to give it to the FBI, and they wouldn't even take it from her.
Well, weren't that they were afraid that they said that we couldn't take it because if we take it, then we have to turn it over to Terry Nichols, defense attorney?
This was after Nichols. Nichols is going to court again in Oklahoma.
Right.
But that doesn't make any difference. He's still guilty. What difference does it make if you implicate other people? This is what didn't make any sense in the entire case. They kept saying, well, bringing other people into the case or bringing a foreign connection in the case is going to influence the case, is going to taint the case, is going to help the defense. How's it going to help the defense if the guy's guilty anyway?
The thing is, it wasn't that they were trying to have any input under the output of the trial. It was, how are we to conceal the truth from the American people? I think that is what's really so devastating about this whole story. Incidentally, the story about the wife who's confessed is in the latest issue of Inside Magazine, if you're interested in that.
Well, this lawsuit has been filed. It's ongoing. The investigation's ongoing. I've been working with them as much as I can, and they're privy to all of the information I had and documents and so on that I kept from those times. But where this thing is really gets interesting is when we ask the obvious question is why would the government want to protect the bad guys? We have to remember it was the Clinton administration at the time. And if it has to do with those records, and those records had to do anything with what we were told at the time by informants, and informants, were calling in from Arkansas saying that this is records of drug smuggling during Iran-Contra through MENA, Arkansas, and if that's so, then Clinton, obviously, both the Clintons were, in the governor's office in Arkansas at the time and allegedly have been pointed at by different people, Terry Reed among them, that said they were involved in some of this drug smuggling with the CIA.
All right, we're going to have to interrupt you right there, and we're going to have to, of course, take a little moment or two and tell our listeners that the Radio Liberty does carry Miracle 2 soap products, and, well, we sell them because, of course, they help to finance what we do. And we think it's a very, very good soap. We've had some listeners who and people have used it who've been very, very impressed, and it's helped their rashes and some other things. Now, we can't make any claims at all or medical claims for it. All I can do is say that if you'd like to get an excellent soap that seems to have an effect on certain rashes and itching, why, there's five products. There's certainly a soap and a moisturizing soap and a neutralizer and a lotion and a gel, and we use all of them at our home. We've done it for a year. And I'm quite impressed by it, which is why we sell them. So if you'd like to get more information, give us a call at 1-800-544-8927, 1-800-5-HIV-WAR. You can go ahead and you can buy a complete set at a discounted price of the products, or we'll be glad to send you a pamphlet and an audio tape, and you decide if you'd like to try them. But if you do, why, of course, it'll help us. But more than that, we hope it'll help you as well. And then, of course, we want to mention some of the items that we're carrying here. We just got in a whole case of a book called Deadly Alliance. Now, it's an inexpensive book. I think it's a $7.95, something like that. But it's a story of how the FBI, Boston office, worked for 20 years with a couple of mafia hitmen who were all the time being protected by the FBI, were out killing people. The story of Whitey Bulger, and of course the story about the man that they, the innocent man they sent to prison for 30 years. You really need to get the Deadly Alliance. You can get it by itself, or you can get it as part of our intelligence special, but give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-5-HIV-WAR, because America, our future, our families are really under attack today. Our 4-tape set on the JFK assassination includes an interview with Lee Harvey Oswald. Of course, it's not an interview that I did, but it is an interview, and you'll actually hear Lee Harvey Oswald talking before the time of the assassination, a two-hour interview with Colonel Fletcher Prouty, who was the liaison between the Pentagon and the CIA at the time of the assassination of the American president, and then, of course, my overall analysis of the reasons why President Kennedy was assassinated. There's so much information that has not been put out, and if you listen to this four-tape set, you will begin to understand that there are forces at work behind the scenes which have been able to confuse the American people about the reality of the murder of an American president. Call 1-800-5-HIV-WAR, that's 1-800-5-HIV-WAR, and ask for the JFK assassination tapes. And Dr. Stan, and I just want to mention, we do have a JFK update, an assassination update, some excellent, fascinating tapes in that, including an interview with Lyndon Johnson's mistress, where she describes the events that led up to the assassination from her vantage point as Lyndon Johnson's lover. Well, anyway, let's get back, of course, now to this story. Apparently, Mr. Johnston and the Clary claimant are bringing a suit. And, of course, now they're in the investigative stage. And are they able then to begin to subpoena some of the government records?
That I can't answer because that's at the legal end and I'm at the investigative end. I'm not sure exactly where they're at on that. They've been trying to do that, but it seems that the FOIA request business is extremely slow if nobody wants to cooperate.
And, of course, if you want to cover things up, you're certainly not going to turn any information over. If you're trying to cover up the fact that there was a connection to the Middle East at that time, which would suggest that maybe if we'd done something about that or done something about Saddam Hussein back at that time, why there never would have been a 9/11. What do you think the relationship is between Saddam Hussein and of course, what we saw on the 11th of September? Is there any connection or not?
Well, the basic connection we've got is we've got former Iraqi soldiers who still think they're working for Saddam Hussein all over this country, looking for weapons of mass destruction, very interested in biological and radiological weapons, and we know that some of them were involved in the Oklahoma City bombing. We know their names. We know who they worked for. We know who supported them, who covered up the investigation. All of this is in the records now. So that's what we're looking at. But before we went on break, I mentioned that the obvious question the listener wants to know is, why would the government cover this up? Why wouldn't the FBI investigate and arrest all the bad guys? Well, we have to remember that if those records were what they said they were, then we're dealing with drug smuggling and money laundering. Now, if that's true, we got to remember who the Northern Alliance was and what happened with Bin Laden, because Bin Laden was a CIA asset during the Mujahideen War against the Russians. Now, why were we interested in Afghanistan? Why did we want to see the Afghanis kick the Russians out of Afghanistan? Well, why did the Russians go into Afghanistan? The Russians went into Afghanistan for one reason, several reasons, but one of the main reasons they went in was to shut down the poppy fields and shut down the opium smuggling, because drugs were becoming an extremely bad problem in Russia. They border Afghanistan, and it was so easy to smuggle up through southern Russia up into Moscow and Leningrad and so on, that they had heroin junkies all over the place, and it was affecting everything. So they decided, well, we're going to go and shut these poppy fields down. Now, that was one of the things they were going to do. What they may or may not have realized was that the CIA was hand-in-hand working with the tribes that were around these poppy fields. So when the Russians were finally ejected, the poppy fields went back into production, the heroin started flowing again, the opium started flowing again, out of Afghanistan. Now, you have to remember the CIA was also heavily involved in the opium production in the Golden Triangle, and still is, where we have hundreds and hundreds of tons of raw opium coming out of Burma, and coming out of Laos, and coming out of the Golden Triangle, which is one of the reasons we're in Southeast Asia to begin with, when the CIA was working the opium fields through the Khun Saw and all those guys back in the Vietnam War days. So we had this massive amount of black funding money coming out, going into private bank accounts, going into corporate bank accounts, front company bank accounts, and so on, that doesn't have to be accounted for to anybody, isn't known by anybody, and Congress doesn't even know about it or have control of it. So it allows the intelligence community to pretty much do what they want to anywhere in the world. We also had drug smuggling coming out of Iran. We had drug smuggling, of course, coming out of South America. So every time you get into these, you find CIA pliers. Iran-Contra was basically an entire operation that had to do with drug smuggling and cocaine and money laundering out of Colombia through Panama up into the United States, including through MENA, through Brownsville, Texas, and through Los Angeles. When you put all these things together, we find out that Al-Qaeda and bin Laden were hand-in-hand with our CIA and with certain people inside of our government who were high-knowledge players, high-level players, in this massive, massive amount of money that was being made from these different drug smuggling operations. So how does Al-Qaeda enter into this today? After the Taliban came into power, they shut down the poppy fields again. Well, that wasn't going to work. So the Northern Alliance was supported. We went in, we took the Taliban out of power, we blamed it on Al-Qaeda. We got the Northern Alliance, they became our allies. We gave them the Afghan government. Now the poppy fields are back open. They did an interview on television. I don't know if it was 2020 or 60 Minutes or what it was here just recently, and they were interviewing an Afghani soldier who was, I guess he was a captain or major rank. And they asked him, they said, what are you going to do now that Al-Qaeda is basically out of the picture and the Northern Alliance and the Taliban's gone? And he said, we only have two choices here. A man can be a soldier or he can raise or sell drugs. That's the only two choices they have for employment. Well, then we look at what happened to Al-Qaeda. Al-Qaeda really isn't destroyed. They just went across the border into Pakistan. When you look at the border area between Pakistan and northeastern Afghanistan and Fort Sherman and the Khyber Pass and all of that, it is a very rugged area, honeycombed with tunnels. The British couldn't take the place and hold it. We're not going to be able to do it. The Russians didn't do it. It's going to go back to the way it's always been. The only question is going to be who's going to be in control, who's going to make the money. So what we do is we have to divert the American attention to other areas. And when we get into those other areas, we're going to say we're going to track every government that supports terrorism. We're going to go to every country that has terrorists. Which countries is it going to be this week? Well, we know that we've got the Sudan. We know that we've got Iraq. We should have turned left at Baghdad and took that guy out, back in 1990-91. So we've also got some other areas in the Middle East. But one area that I think you're going to see us going back into, that we've already been to once, is Somalia. Now, that leads us to the book, Doorway to Hell, Disaster in Somalia. Why is Somalia important? Why was it important then? If we wanted to go feed starving people, we could do it in Cambodia. We could do it in Ethiopia. We could do it in 100 places, Chad, Central Africa. I mean, Somalia had no more gravitational weight on humanitarianism than any other country did. What Somalia did have were three things. Somalia had a strategic location in the sense that it's in the Horn of Africa. It is, if you look at a map, Somalia sticks out toward Yemen, and it covers one half of the entrance into the Red Sea and into toward the Suez Canal, the Mediterranean, Saudi Arabia, Egypt, and Israel. So it is a very strategic situation as far as the location. The next thing is, during the research of Doorway to Hell, General Wheeler happened to be working on his master's degree at Tulsa University. Tulsa University is very heavy into the petroleum industry and petrochemical operations and so on in their educational end, and they've got a massive library. And he managed to find transcripts of surveys that had been done in Somalia when he looked up Somalia in the library. And it is very, very rich in underground oil, both ashore and offshore. They had just built a new oil refinery near Mogadishu that they never got to use because of the Somalian Civil War took it over. So they never got to pump any oil or refine any oils, and that they wanted that back. So if you look at the map, it's right next to Saudi Arabia. So if you don't have to rely on Saudi Arabian oil and you can pump your own oil through British Petroleum or Texaco or Shell or whoever in Somalia, and you've got your own oil reserves there, then you've pretty much cornered your own market. You don't need to rely on anybody else, especially Arab oil. Now the problem here is Somalia is mainly Islamic, and Somalia supports Islamic terrorism, and in turn is supported by Islamic terrorism, including Al-Qaeda. Al-Qaeda controls the province that is the tip of the Horn of Africa. So when you go back and you dig into Doorway to Hell, we lay out the history of this place, what really went on behind the scenes, who the players were then and who the players are now, and pretty much you're going to be able to see what to expect in the future. Now, the book and the movie Black Hawk Down talked about 15 hours on one battle. Doorway to Hell talks about both of our operations, Provide Hope and Continue Hope, in Somalia, and covers 15 months of operation. So you've got two different, you know, it's apples and oranges on Doorway to Hell versus Black Hawk Down. They're both excellent. Black Hawk Down goes into a lot more detail on the, what we call the Battle on No Name Street. In this book also, we were extremely fortunate because, and I don't know what General Wheeler has said on his interviews that he's had on your show, but his son, I'm sure he mentioned, was there, and he was one of the main communications officers for the engineer battalion that was there. So pretty much he was all over the place setting up communication sites for everybody else. And he was privy to a lot of radio traffic, a lot of information, a lot of written information, a lot of meetings, and so on. And he was able to retain a lot of this stuff and bring it back, and we were able to compile it all and put it into this book.
Well, it's an excellent, excellent book. And incidentally, for our listeners, we do carry Doorway to Hell. And, of course, it was written, co-written by General Wheeler. And then, of course, Craig came in and rewrote it, and you know, because he's had a lot of experience writing. So it's a very, very readable book. And it really is the only book that gives you an idea of the just the enormity of our commitment there. And I think we had something like 85,000-87,000 troops in and out of there. But the horrible, horrible circumstances they had to live under in this very, very hostile area. And then, of course, what was this really all about? Well, it was really all about an awful lot of oil that was there. And, of course, this is one of the richest areas, untapped areas in the whole world. And that certainly played a very large part in our decision to give humanitarian aid to that region.
Right. Well, we also point out in the book just how much damage the Clinton administration did to the military, and how inept they were at handling a situation like this, plus what a tragedy it is to put American troops under UN command anywhere in the world. The battle on No Name Street, when the American Rangers attempted to capture Mohammed Idid's staff and were trapped, did not realize the intelligence resources they had were lacking. They didn't realize that every Somalian in that part of the city was combat experienced and armed to the teeth and had been trained by Al-Qaeda on how to shoot down helicopters, which they succeeded in shooting two of them down. We didn't have the assets and resources to go in and get them out for a plan B if everything went wrong, because there was no plan B. When we did have to use armor to get into downtown Mogadishu to this particular area and get these guys out that were trapped there, we had no armor because Les Aspin decided we didn't need tanks, we didn't need any of our own armor, it was a UN operation, let them provide it. Well, the problem was, when we needed UN armor, it was M60 tanks that are American tanks, the problem was they're owned by the Pakistanis.
We're going to let you tell the rest of that story when we get back, but right now, of course, I have to remind those of you listening that Radio Liberty is listener supported, and if you agree that we have an important message that needs to get out, give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-5-HIV-WAR, and join the Radio Liberty family of supporters. And for a suggested gift of at least $20 a month or more, you'll get our four best tapes of the month. You'll get our monthly newsletter. But more than that, you'll be helping us do what we do 5 hours a day and 2 hours on Saturday, and maybe soon even more. We just don't know. But we've had some other offers to increase the amount of time we're doing radio on Saturday. And I do what I do because I believe that freedom is worthwhile preserving. And we are moving rapidly towards a new world order and a new world religion. And, of course, ultimately that will mean the destruction of America as we know it. So if you're concerned about what's going on, we hope you'll climb on board and join us in this epic struggle. We hope that, of course, you'll tell others about our programs. You'll tell them about our website at www.radioliberty.com. That's www.radioliberty.com, where you can listen to many of our programs that are archived. There will be up to about 100 programs there before long, and we welcome you pulling them down, copying them, getting them into other people's hands. Help people to understand what's really going on today, because you're not getting the truth from Dan Rather, Tom Brokaw, and Barbara Walters. So again, remember the website, www.radioliberty.com. Remember our telephone number, 1-800-5-HIV-WAR, because America is certainly at war today. This is a fascinating four-tape set, Genocide, and one of the tapes is an interview with a Dr. Dinigan, who heard back in 1969 actually a talk given by Dr. Day, who would later become the president of Planned Parenthood. And Dr. Day laid out the whole plan for America: the fact there are too many people, the fact that we're going to have to create new diseases, the fact that we're going to have to conceal some of the very obvious treatments for cancer, because people are going to have to die of something. They might as well die of cancer. An incredible interview, and a series of other interviews that will go into the background of what is happening in America, why new diseases are cropping up all the time. Call 1-800-5-HIV-WAR for copies of our four-tape set, Genocide. It is vitally important that you help us to get this message out across America, because without knowledge, my people perish. America, our values, our future are under attack today. And that Dr. Day we just talked about was the actually the medical director of Planned Parenthood, not the director of it. Our guest is Craig Roberts, and Craig, of course, has written a number of books which we carry. We, of course, the Dead Witnesses, we carry Medusa File and Kill Zone, A Sniper Looks at Dealey Plaza. All three are available by giving us a call at 1-800-5-HIV-WAR. And we've got John calling from Syracuse. John, do you have a question or comment?
I was listening to your Somalia depiction of the oil and the Somalis. In 1990, I was in Somalia. It has a 22,000 concrete runway there. It's the only civilization there is the airport outside of Mogadishu. But if you want to talk about where the real game is being played, it's in the Caspian Sea.
All right.
And the Russians have built a 900-mile pipeline with the help of Chevron Texaco from the Caspian to the Black Sea. OPEC and the rest of the oil-producing nations are watching this so closely. It is unbelievable. And I would not put it past OPEC that the Al-Qaeda has been hired to hit the United States for one reason. The oil that the Russians are pumping is underselling the price of oil for OPEC. And the Caspian has more oil underneath it. By the way, Dr. Stan, it's the largest saltwater lake on the entire planet, and it's below sea level. And it has more oil underneath the Caspian Basin than there is under Saudi Arabia.
Okay, well, fine. Thank you so much for that, and I'm sure you're right. There is a tremendous amount of oil there, and, of course, the pipeline now that will be built across Afghanistan by UNICAL certainly is playing some part in our involvement in Afghanistan. Would you agree with that at all, Craig?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, you can't leave oil out of the picture anywhere. You know, all the investigations that I've been into, several of them always either crop up oil, drugs, or money laundering. It seems that they're all intertwined, and because what you're really talking about is money, and money is power. So when you're talking about power, and you need, and you're talking about big bucks worldwide, it always comes back to the same things. The two top dollar things are drugs and oil, because they're expendables. They get used up. The more you pump, the more you grow, the more you sell, the more that gets used, the more money you make.
All right, fine. And, of course, Somalia certainly is in a strategic position. Somalia certainly has oil. We've got Mike calling in from Tennessee. Mike, did you have a question or comment?
I've got a few points, comments I'd like to make. Is this Colonel Roberts?
This is Colonel Roberts, right.
Okay. The first point is various reports that we were preparing to wage war with Afghanistan. I'm out of breath. Excuse me. prior to 9/11.
I've heard those reports, yes, and we actually have a couple of those mentioned in my September newsletter. Anything else?
Yeah, I got about five more points, quick points. CIA executive director of the company he used to work for sold airline stocks short prior to 9/11. The Israelis were told not to show up for work at the World Trade Center. Bush was out of town the day of the attack. He tried to kill the investigation. The FBI wouldn't allow the hard drive, I believe I'm pronouncing this right, Massui.
Zacharias Massui.
Massui. What's the word I'm looking for?
They wanted to access the hard drive of the laptop. Okay, look.
And one more quick.
All right, quick.
The CFR tried to set up a czar prior to this homeland defense. So the whole thing fits in with the Hegelian dialectic.
Okay, thanks so very much, Mike. And I don't know about the Israelis being told or the Jewish people being told to stay home on that day. I've heard that, but I've never been able to verify that. Have you ever heard anything about that to really verify that?
Well, you know, there's so much that comes out in the first 72 hours, and then you see it one time and it goes away and you never see it again. And we tried to chase that down, and the only thing that we were ever able to chase down was there were some people on a rooftop that looked jubilant as the towers were on fire, and it was claimed that they were Mossad agents. Now, I don't know where that information came from as far as verifying these guys were Mossad agents, and we were never able to actually verify that.
All right, fine. And so, but I think most of the other things that Mike was saying are fairly valid. And they may or not be of any significance. The important thing is that, certainly, apparently, there were some plans to go to war with Afghanistan. Anybody who doubts that, the Time magazine, and of course, I want to give you sources that you can get. If you want a lot of information, you can go to Infowars.com, and that's prior knowledge section. But go to your Time magazine, December 31st, January 7th issue, Time's Man of the Year. Look in the article on the war room, and you'll find out that the CIA was working on plans to go to war with Al-Qaeda, which was Afghanistan at the time of the attack. If we were working on plans to go to war with Afghanistan at the time of the attack, this was a very, very convenient way of getting us into it. That's only perhaps a coincidence. Why don't you pick up your story there, Craig?
Okay, let me back up to where we were in Mogadishu. We had the Americans trapped. We had to have armor to get in there. The only armor was owned by the Pakistanis, and they refused to roll. The Turkish general in charge wrote our guys off and said they went up there without us knowing about it, and so we're not going to worry about it. We're just going to write them off and let them die. So here you had the Turkish general in charge, pretty much willing to die fight to the last American, without raising a finger to help them out. So there was a young American captain at the base compound who jumped up on the back of an M60 tank and shoved his Beretta in the ear of the Pakistani tank company commander and told him, you drive or we will. And that's how we got the Pakistanis to go out and to get into the city and form an armored column to rescue our guys. It took one of our troops to get up there on gunpoint and force them to do it. This is not totally unusual. This is a typical UN operation. When you mix troops up like this, you have rainbow chain of commands of different various nationalities and radios that don't talk to each other, people that argue about plans, religions that are in conflict, and no loyalty between countries. That's World War II worked because the British fought in the British sector and the Americans fought in the American sector, even though Eisenhower was a great politician and able to have people work together. You had even field marshals and generals that couldn't stand each other's guts, like Montgomery and Patton. We're going to have the same thing every time we deal with this UN hodgepodge of various Meals on Wheels missions around the earth. And the bad thing is what the Clintons have done to the minister, to the military, at this point now has put us so far behind the power curve that it could take us 5 to 10 years to get back on a footing where we could fight a two-front conflict, because we can't do it today. Now, we're already committed overseas in all these various places. were committed in Afghanistan. If anything else goes on, we don't have, you know, we don't have any dogs to chase the wolf off.
Well, we can always depend upon the Germans that have their station in New Mexico with their Air Force, so I'm sure they'll come to our defense.
Well, and you've got, you know, General Barry McGaffrey, retired, who was Clinton's drug czar, who used to be the SOCOM commander, who told the graduating class at CASQ at Fort Leavenworth, Kansas, about 8 or 9 years ago, that should we have a situation in this country requiring military intervention, such as a national emergency, civil unrest, whatever. Now you can add in there terrorism, weapons of mass destruction, biological warfare, whatever. That if we were committed overseas, that because of the build down of our military, that we would be forced to rely upon foreign assets to police our soil. Now that's basically almost verbatim what he said. In fact, the young gentleman, Brian Wheeler, who's in the book Doorway to Hell, who gave us the photographs and most of the information, was sitting in that CASQ class and took copious notes and called me right afterwards. He's kind of my adopted nephew, and when he found out that McGaffrey was a member of the Council on Foreign Relations, all of a sudden he perked up and began writing down everything he said, so we know exactly what he said. Now, when you say using foreign troops as assets to police our own soil, that's pretty scary.
I say it is. In fact, my friend Jack McLam is in touch with military units across the country, and he said that some of them report that they have in training here some foreign troops that are on permanent station. Why would you have foreign troops on permanent station? I don't understand that.
Well, you shouldn't. You know, and what the Germans are doing in New Mexico with the Luftwaffe, you know, training with their Tornadoes. When I was working with the F-16 outfit here, we would deploy to England and we would work with the Harriers of the First Fighter Royal Air Force Fighter Squadron, or we would work with some of the other units over there. And what we found out is in Europe there's very few days of good, clear VFR flying weather. Most of it was overcast. So they loved to come over here and train in our desert, which they did in World War II quite a bit. We trained a lot of foreign and American pilots in Arizona and New Mexico because they had 300-and-something days a year of flying weather. But to station them over here and give them a base, and sure, it's a training squadron, and they're rotating Luftwaffe pilots in and out, but pretty much they've taken over the whole base. Now we have the same thing going on at Fort Bliss. We have the same thing going on at Fort Polk, Louisiana, which is known as Operation Cooperative Nugget, where we have built a combat town. We call it a MOUT site, which is Military Operations and Urban Terrain. The same thing as a combat town. It looks just like downtown America. It's got a church, it's got a school, it's got a ranch-style home, it's got Main Street USA, tunnels and sewers and the whole bit. And they're training European and especially former Warsaw Pact troops, and have been for a number of years now, to go do house-to-house search and seizure. Now, that's kind of a scary thing because this town doesn't look like any place else in the world except downtown USA.
Yeah.
And then these guys go home and they train their troops to do the same thing. Now, what are they really up to?
Well, I think we have to, every American should ask that question. Craig, we're out of time. We could go on for two more hours, but God bless you. Thank you so much for being with us. The book we've been talking about is Doorway to Hell, and it's available by calling 1-800-5-HIV-WAR. We'll talk to you later, Craig.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. And, of course, this is Dr. Stan asking you to pray for America, asking you to pray for our leaders and pray for revival, and please remember to pray for my ministry, Radio Liberty, for our provision and our protection. And remember that freedom is a very, very precious possession. It's always lost when there aren't enough people who are willing to fight for it. You were born free by accident. You, of course, been able to live free as a privilege, but to die free is an obligation. We'll be back tomorrow. Until then, may the Lord be with you.